Hello, hello, hello. This is the 13th Big Planet Comics podcast.
Lucky number 13.
Yeah, very, very lucky. There's a lot of comics this week, so I think this is going to be a very review-centric episode. My name is Kevin.
My name is Nick Lucky Charms Liapis.
And I'm Jared Captain Crunch.
Smith.
No, I'm just Captain Crunch.
Jared changed his last name to Crunch. So, the reason is we're going to have so many reviews this time is because the new DC 52 is really kicking into high gear this week. There are 13 books.
It's blasting into your minds.
It's blasting into your minds.
And your wallets.
So, as always, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and you can check it out on the Big Planet Comics webpage, and you can become likers of us on Facebook.
Like me.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys should definitely like us because we're awesome. Just a couple things, though, before we start getting into all these reviews, because there's
lots
of reviews.
News.
Yeah, so a lot of Big Planet related news. One is this Friday, September 9th at Big Planet Comics Vienna, we're going to have Roger Langridge.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be signing copies of his new book, Snarked. He's going to have Thor the Mighty Avenger. He's going to have Muppets. If you guys can make it,
Fred the Clown.
Yeah, Fred the Clown.
He is an astounding artist. He'll be there from 5 to 7.
He's fantastic. And it's your chance to meet somebody who's from New Zealand.
That's true. So hopefully.
So if you're a fan of Roger Langridge or you're a fan of Flight of the Conchords.
Yep. Or meeting something rare like unicorn or something.
Right. Or if you like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Definitely. He was a hobbit.
Ask
in
him
one
to
of the
sign
movies.
Your Lord
Don't
of the
say
Rings
that.
DVDs.
He wasn't a hobbit.
He wasn't?
Yeah. We should have more respect for Mr. Langridge.
Yes.
But maybe he's a hobbit in the new movie. I don't know.
Maybe.
Or an elf.
So there's that going on. Another big thing, our Georgetown store is moving.
Hooray!
Yeah, so this is happening at the end of September, right?
Yep. Over the month of September, they will be having a super sale of 25% off of all their trade paperback softcovers and the hardcovers in preparation for the move.
Yeah, so the new store is going to be down on U Street. I don't have the exact address.
I think it's 1520.
Okay.
But between 15th Street and 16th Street.
About a few blocks from the metro, yeah. The U Street Cardozo metro, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little easier to get there.
You can go to Ben's Chili Bowl before or after with your comic books.
Or both.
Yeah.
Both. It is delicious.
Delivious.
It is delivious. You can get a chili half smoke and read Animal Man.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. And I feel like there was one more thing I wanted to talk about.
Something
in
going
to the
on
store.
This weekend.
Something
maybe.
SPX is this weekend.
Yay!
Yes. So
if
that's...
only Kevin remembered SPX.
Yeah. So I've been working very hard on SPX along with a lot of other people, of course. And it's going to be a really good show this year. We got Craig Thompson is going to be there, who did Blankets, Johnny Ryan, Roger Langridge is going to be there as well. But still come to the store if you can. We want to have a lot of people in there for Roger Langridge. Roz Chast, a New Yorker cartoonist. The whole Pizza Island crew, which Aussie. Is like Kate Beaton, who does Harker Vagrant, and Julia Wirtz, who does Drinking at the Movies and Fart Party. It's going to be awesome.
There are so many talented people there this year. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so if you guys want to go, that's it's right off the White Flint Metro, but go to spxbo.com, and we've got all the information there that you're going to need.
Yep, Saturday, Sunday. It'll be awesome. We'll
You'll
be there.
Have a great time.
Yeah, it's always a good time.
Nick and promised.
You get to meet a lot of cool people. Get a lot of stuff you can't really find anywhere else, too.
Maybe you'll see me, too. I'll be wandering around with a bottle of whiskey in my hand.
Well, I'll be there. It's definitely true. We'll probably have lots of bottles of whiskey and five-hour energy drinks littering the floors of our hotel rooms. Cool. So a lot of reviews this week, so we should just get right into it.
Wait. No viewer mail?
There is no viewer mail this week.
Oh.
We got dozens and dozens of letters, but we just don't have time for it.
All right, let's do it. Reviews.
All right, let's do it.
We love comics. They're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
Now, listen to the theme song. It made me think of one thing that we should talk about. It wasn't viewer mail exactly, but Mark, who sent us some letters in before, came into the store, and he said... Sorry. It was Michael who sent us in a letter before he came into the store, and he said, what's going to happen if one of these Scott Lobdell books is good?
Oh,
my mind will explode.
Yeah. What do you think, Jared?
I think there'll be a new holiday in comics.
I think it's not going to happen, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. It's like, what if the Earth exploded tomorrow? Like, well, I guess maybe it could happen, but probably not.
Well, maybe it'll be like the new Bizarro universe.
Where Scott Lobdell comics are good.
Yes.
Me M love this Scott Lobdell comic. All right, so we're going to go through all these in alphabetical order. And luckily that starts us out with like the biggest comic of the week, which is Action Comics number 1. This is by Grant Morrison and Rags Morales. This is kind of, last week the big book was Justice League.
Right.
And then this week for the new 52, the big book is definitely Action Comics number 1.
For sure.
So what did you guys think about it?
It was action.
And it was comics.
And it was comics. In general, it was pretty good. It's off to a good start. It's a little weird because it takes place before Justice League, but it never really actually tells you that. But you know, just because he's not wearing the costume and he's kind of like just moved to Metropolis from Smallville. But it's cool because it's a different take on Superman that we've seen before. He's kind of brash and reckless, and he's kind of not a jerk, but he's like...
He's kind of a jerk,
but he's really like hardcore. He's like...
Yeah.
He's like, I want to take out these, you know, like criminals that nobody else wants to deal with, like, you know, like politicians.
But
and
see, that's the thing.
Rich
like,
people and
the
stuff.
The oldest Superman comics used to be like that. He'd be out, like, you know, busting up, like, you know, guys trying to stop unions and stuff. Like, he was really fighting for the common man back in the 30s and 40s. And then, you know, he became this big corporate icon. But I felt like it was a lot more dynamic than Superman's been in a long, long time.
Well, that's for sure.
like even like Lois Lane and Jimmy, like I was excited about their relationship, which has changed with him. And like, it just was exciting.
I was just glad he wasn't walking across America.
That has been pretty bad. No, and it's cool. I like that that he's kind of back to the origin of Superman where he's, you know, he's faster than a speeding bullet. And he can he can't actually fly. He can leap buildings in a single bound. And he seems to be kind of figuring out who he is a little bit. And
very useful.
It ends up he's kind of an alien and he's kind of a jerk.
yeah.
And you get a little bit of Lex Luthor in it. And you get a lot of setup for stuff that's going to come along. One thing I will say about this comic, it didn't really feel very Grant Morrison-y to me.
That's true.
Yeah. One of his more straightforward. It felt more a little more like Batman and Robin, where it's like a little more straightforward.
Yeah, not even like All-Star Superman, which was definitely like far out there sci-fi Grant Morrison.
The Lex Luthor stuff was really weird.
Yeah,
which
definitely.
That was the most Grant Morrison-y part of it. And I feel like, you know, as it goes on, it'll probably get really weird, but yes. That's fine.
Yeah, but I will say I thought it was really good. Yeah. Rags Morales' art was really good, and I like that Morrison's writing a slightly more accessible comic, maybe.
Yes.
Like, his stuff's been a little bit nuts recently. I always love it, but I feel like this is a comic that people will be able to pick up and read without having to like go back and read old Superman comics from the 60s.
yeah,
that would help.
Yeah, but definitely there were some hits and misses with the DC stuff this week.
That's true.
But I think this was definitely one of the hits.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, so that was Action Comics number one. Moving on to a graphic novel that Jared and Nick read. This is the America's softcover. This is by M.K. Reed and Jonathan Hill. Jared, why don't you tell people what this is about? It seems a little complicated, but it's interesting.
Interestingly enough, I was off last week because I was in Portland, Oregon, and they actually had a display of all of the original pages of art from this book.
Oh,
and
really?
So my friends who are there are like, oh, what's this cool graphic novel? And I'm like, I've never heard of it. And
that's
then
cool.
It comes out the next week. It's basically a combination of like three or four different stories, a lot of like, the main characters are eighth graders, so it's a lot of like the transition into becoming a high schooler and the uncertainty of life. There's religious issues about like, you know, how much should religion control your life. There's things about coming out as a gay person. There's stuff about the importance of fantasy novels. There's stuff about censorship. There's stuff about small American life, and they're all woven together into a really good narrative.
It's great. I mean, the main character is, you know, he's just getting out of middle school, and his best friend's mother is like a crazy, like super Christian woman. And it kind of takes a little bit of a real life stuff because it's, you know, he the main character is a huge fan of like this novel. And it's very much like a Harry Potter type novel, but it's like with a female character. And
if there are like nine and Harry Potter novels and they're still coming out, like an ongoing saga.
And his best friend's mom is super Christian. So she thinks it's all witchcraft and it's influencing people. She calls it like pornography at one point, but all this stuff that's not true. And a good chunk of the book takes place in like a kind of a town hall meeting where they're trying to decide whether to ban this book from the library.
Yeah, the classic, like, you know, you're going to fight for the right to defend, you know, the chance to read whatever literature or whatever against whatever.
Yeah, once that stuff started happening, I like really got into it. I was like, oh, this is cool. It's like, I really hate this woman. You know, like,
but I feel like even that, they gave her enough reason, like she really believed that it was important for her family to stay together on these traditional values and that, you know, she realized she was hurting her kids emotionally, but she's like, this is more important for my family to be like this way.
Yeah, it wasn't too like, this woman is so wrong. You should, you know, she's evil. But, you know, it was, you know, you could clearly tell that the writer was against censorship for sure.
Yes. Now, I didn't get a chance to read it, but I flipped through and it looks like large chunks of the book are actually like this, the novel that everybody's reading.
Right. That's like the big, like, kind of twist to the art or I don't know, thing that the art's got going for it is it's well drawn, but the new novel in this series has just come out. That's like the framework for the whole book. And so every person in the city, except for the people who are very against it, are reading the book. So whenever there's a scene where someone sits down and is reading the book, it suddenly shifts into the art and telling the story from this fantasy novel.
And are there themes that run through the story that also run through the...
Not always, but it tends to go right into that of like, you know, either from people reading the book to each other, an important point they're making about it, or just like a theme that's going with it. Yeah.
Yeah, because the main point of part of these, the religious group in that is like, you know, it's against family values and stuff like that. And then they, you know, the scenes they show from the book are like, the main character reuniting with her mother
after
and
like 20 years.
Yeah. And like having like a deep, you know, connection to her and like then finding it's out strong about, family values, basically.
Yeah, finding out about the family she never knew she had and like her friend who's always been with her and will stick with her. And, you know, while at the same time, the main character is losing his best friend. And it's a great combination of stuff.
Yeah. It sounds really interesting. And from talking to you guys before the podcast, it seems like you guys both loved it.
Yeah. It's and amazing. It's almost, and it, I mean, we haven't talked about it too much, but most of it is about actually this kid and like his. Yeah. Kind of going to high school and like going through puberty and like starting to talk to girls and like being really awkward and weird and then realizing that, you know, maybe it's not so bad because he's like, you know, it's like I hate everybody here, but then he meets a couple people that are cool in high school. And
yeah, it's cool. A great evolution of a character because he does start off as kind of the sullen jerk who doesn't get along with anyone because he's such a, like a shy little nerdy outcast. And he really does change as he becomes this freshman at high school and becomes a better person.
And I have to say the best thing is the teachers in this. Whenever there's a new teacher introduced, they're like incredible. They just like, it's like two pages of them like just talking about their class and what they're going to teach. But you get like
some
so many character things.
So funny.
Like the algebra teacher is like, oh, you know, you guys want to be like this and that when you grow up. Right. But, you know, you kind of have to learn algebra to pass your SATs to get into college. So
and that's it. Most of you will never use this again. You'll all be like failures. You'll be bagging groceries.
Yeah. But you'll need this.
It's what we wanted our teachers to always say when we were.
Yes, it's really true.
But he's like, you'll need this for college, but that's it. Yep. But you need to do it because you need it for college. So shut up and listen to me.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Like, none of you will even be smart enough to be a math teacher. Let's finish this up.
So yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And the art's great. It reminded me a lot of Jordan Crane.
Yeah.
And,
good point.
It looks great.
Art's great. Yeah, it's really good.
So that's Americus. I don't know if I said, but it's by M.K. Reed and Jonathan Hill.
Yep.
And I think First Second put it out. Yeah, very cool graphic novel. There's so much stuff to buy this week, but...
M.K. Reed's at SPX?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure M.K. Reed is at SPX.
Pretty sure?
Well, there's also Michaela Reed, and I get the two mixed up, but one of them's there.
Either way, you should buy this and see if they're at SPX this week.
Right. You should buy it either way. All right, so moving on to another one of the DC books that came out this week. This is Animal Man number one. This is by Jeff Lemire, who we all love, and art by Travel Foreman. I think Animal Man was probably my favorite of the DC launched books. There was another one this week that we'll talk about that was also very good. But Jeff Lemire, you guys might know, he writes Sweet Tooth. He wrote the Essex County books for Top Shelf, and he wrote Superboy for a while. And his take on Animal Man, I think, is definitely the best since the Grant Morrison days.
Yep. And similar in some ways, a very kind of different. I wouldn't say iconic, but like it's got a flavor to it that is unlike, I think, any of the other books that came out this week.
It's a lot more about like family.
Yep.
Well, and that's what the Morrison stuff was about. I mean, the Morrison stuff got very meta and weird towards the end, but the core of that book was always the way that is it Buddy Baker? Always, you know, the fact that Buddy Baker being Animal Man affects his family in a lot of different ways.
And that's
negatively and positively. But,
but that's one of the greatest things about him is that like for all the people like Peter Parker, whoever, who have like relatives or people they worry about, so few like superheroes have kids or like are married to someone in a way that actually matters. They're all like stand-ins to be like kidnapped or something. And this is a really important part of who he is.
But the first half of this book is a very, I won't say straightforward, but it's in ways kind of a straightforward kind of hostage situation story that Animal Man uses his powers to deal with. And then the second half of this story is like a dream sequence that's insane.
Yeah.
And one thing I loved about this book, it had a real kind of Vertigo feel to
very
it.
Very much, yeah.
But it's also kind of established that it's in the regular DC universe, all the other New 52 books, and it was great. And the art.
Art's awesome. I love Travel Foreman for a long time. I really liked his, he did the original Ares miniseries back in the day, which was pretty cool. But this is a little different. It's a little more, I don't know how to describe it. It's a little more like, not abstract, but like just weird. It's a lot weirder than his straightforward comic book stuff.
Yeah, the art in a lot of ways reminded me of the David Lopez art that's been in Mystic over the last couple months.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's got a very like thin line and a kind of fine look to it. But then towards the end, it's the dream, all the dream sequence stuff is so insane. It's like it doesn't look like anything else.
Yeah, it's really weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it definitely got one of the best covers.
Yeah, it's a great cover. And it's a great book. Lemire's gotten better and better as time goes by. And I think probably this is, for me, better than all of his Superboy work, which I also love.
I love the Superboy. Yeah. But this is more. Yeah. I mean, this is like. I feel like he got his chance to kind of do whatever he wants.
Yeah, he's got more to work with. Just like do something great.
Yeah, they were like, don't worry about everything that happened before and just write whatever you want.
Yeah,
which is cool because he kind of also kind of kept some of that stuff from before in his, you know, you could tell that he wanted to keep some of it because, you know, the family's like, you were Animal Man for a long time.
Right.
And you should, they're kind of like, you should be Animal Man again because it's kind of boring around here. You know?
Yeah, I think it's kind of his most sophisticated work in a lot of ways. Like he lays a lot of groundwork in this issue in a lot of subtle ways. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And he's been all over Twitter and Facebook and stuff. And he's,
oh, really?
Yeah, Jeff Lemire is super excited about this book.
Really?
Great.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like there's a lot of cool stuff coming down, you know, down the way. So, yeah, Animal Man number one is definitely, I'd say, a must buy. Yep. Out of all these books, there's this one more we'll talk about later that you just have to pick up.
Yep.
Yeah, they're so interesting.
That actually ties into this one. I'll tell you why later.
Yeah, well, all the books tie together in one way, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, too. But, all right, so moving on to another one of the new DC 52 books. This is Batgirl number one. This is by Gail Simone, and art is by Adrian Seoff. This is going to be one of the more controversial books of the new 52, I feel like.
For the big DC fans, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing is, people love the old Batgirl. Like the, not the old Batgirl, but the last Batgirl.
The previous, the Stephanie Brown.
Yeah, they love that. I mean, it was a good series. And but the thing that bothers people the most, I guess, is that, you know, now Barbara Gordon has her legs back. She can walk.
Yeah, why don't you give people kind of the basics of what's going on that's different and also kind of the same.
So in this comic, you know, it starts out for there being Batgirl, and she's fighting actually these kind of like street kids that are committing these robberies around
But
around
they're
Gotham
definitely
City.
Setting it up that she's still like the, you know, the very investigative Batman type, but she is still brand new and getting back into being a superhero.
And they reference her. They actually show a picture from Killing Joke, you know, like she got shot by Joker and she lost her use of her legs. There's no actual explanation yet. I feel like there will be.
She says it's a miracle.
Yeah, there's no real explanation for why she's walking again, but they definitely reference her not being able to walk. Right. For a
long time. The explanation is that the Reverse Flash killed Flash's mother. Anyone back? No, but I thought it was interesting the way that they deal with the fact that that happened because. Because Barbara Gordon as Batgirl is very uneasy, especially whenever a gun shows up. I mean, she's like nervous. She says she's getting really shaky as things go on, and she's not really sure if a superhero should feel that way.
Right.
And I think it's a cool way to kind of address that this very devastating,
this terrible
thing
trauma. Yeah.
And
it's written by Gail Simone, who has a really, you know, she's really familiar with her because she wrote like all of Birds of Prey and stuff. So she knows all about Barbara Gordon.
Right. And Barbara Gordon definitely has a really well-defined personality in this.
Right.
And I like the way they deal with the relationship with her and Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And, no, I thought this was a really good book. The art was okay.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but it was good.
It was definitely did its job. It didn't blow me away or anything like that.
No, but it was definitely good.
But overall, I thought Batgirl was a really a good first issue.
Yeah. It's a strong start. I'm curious to see where it goes, and I feel like they have to explain the why she can walk again.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll come up somehow. Yeah. I did like the villain in this. I don't know if he's new or not, but the mirror.
I feel like he's new.
Yeah. But I thought he was pretty interesting, and I'm glad that Batgirl is getting maybe potentially her own villains instead of just like fighting like
like Joker.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and definitely setting her up with like a lot of her own conflict to deal with, which is more than a lot of superheroes have had for a while.
Yeah. So, but definitely a good first issue. Definitely worth checking out. This was definitely in my sort of top half of the DC books. There's so many books out this week.
The one thing I'm worried about is this and Batwoman being on the stands at the same time. Because Batwoman's also a redheaded.
She actually gets called Batwoman, and then she's like, close, but I'm Batgirl.
Yeah, I feel like Batwoman's going to be so separate from everything else.
Well, the funny thing is, I think Batwoman is older than Batgirl.
Well, yeah.
Is younger than Batgirl, is what I meant.
Oh.
I feel like Barbara Gordon is older than.
In this universe, she might be very young. It's hard to tell.
It's there's going to be a lot of really weird stuff like that with the new books, though, where people are going to be trying to figure all that stuff out.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people will figure it out on the internet, but
not us.
So moving on to another book in the Batverse, the Bativerse. The Bat Universe. Anyway, so this is Batwing number one by Judd Winnick and Ben Oliver. Batwing is a character that's come out of the whole Batman Incorporated thing where Bruce Wayne is going around and sort of finding Batman around the world.
Yeah, he's like the Batman of Africa, basically.
Yeah, and he's the Batman of Africa. It was kind of a big deal when the Batwing appeared, right? Because he's a Muslim character. Or am I getting him mixed up with the Batwing from France?
I have no idea.
Or I don't know. What did you guys think of this?
I thought it was pretty cool, actually. I felt like, all right, I haven't kept up with Batman Incorporated, so I don't remember much about when he first showed up in that. But so not having that background, he felt like one of the freshest characters in the DC books that came out this week, because he's got his own set of stuff. He's in Africa. He's basically a Batman guy in a lot of ways. You know, he's kind of more of a Nightwing, because he actually works with the local police force as an officer, as his secret identity, and then going back into being Batwing. But
and actually, he's cool. The only character I feel that so far in any of these books it's actually outside the U.S. Well, I guess Justice League International, but
right. But definitely, it's like showing like, how big the universe is.
Yeah,
the rest.
It's
of
cool
planet.
That there's a character that's in Africa. I mean, that doesn't really happen. It's usually like New York or Gotham City or whatever.
One thing I definitely liked about this book was it seemed like, as well as setting up this character of Batwing, they were setting up a sort of backstory of these superheroes that were active in Africa at one point called the Kingdom, and one of the characters, it seems, has sort of gone rogue. And I thought that was kind of an interesting...
Well, they do the same. It's basically like the Justice League. They said, we had 7 superheroes show up around the same time everyone did, and most of them have disappeared or retired. So it's like, not just Americans are forming the Justice League. All over the planet, there are superheroes doing their thing, which is really cool.
Yeah, and it's good to see that DC is taking opportunities to introduce more new characters, even in the background of these books, and sort of not just rely on all these kind of weird... You know, it's like, I'm glad Psycho Pirate isn't in this or whatever. You know, just like these kind of characters that have been overused.
It also continues the throw line that all of these characters, all the superheroes, kind of started appearing at the same time.
Yeah,
which I feel like maybe will be part of a story later. but the they're like Justice League started appearing, and then we had superheroes, and then the Chinese had superheroes, and everybody, all the superheroes kind of appeared at the same time, which is kind of cool. And they're all kind of young and fresh, which is neat. And in this, Batwing is like, it's weird because Batman's in this, obviously, but they don't really mention Batman Incorporated. So I'm not sure like how it ties in exactly, but
we're going to say that for every DC book that comes out.
None of this is really too clear.
But that's the thing, is that they're hinting there's this history to it, which they can flesh out at any point, which feels good. Like, it's not a completely brand new universe. It's that stuff has been thought out and stuff's going on.
Yeah, so. And I think we'll get a good sense of how Batman Incorporated has sort of been reworked in November when the Batman Incorporated series starts.
But it also doesn't matter because, I mean, none of that matters in this, because it's just about this guy and he's becoming the Batman basically of Africa, and he's dealing with that and what that means. And
He's a good character. I just thought he's a good character.
Yeah, definitely. If you take this story on its own merit, I mean, it's very readable, and I really enjoyed it. So it's
cool. And art's good too.
Yeah, I was excited about this DC relaunch, but I'm actually surprised at how many of these books I actually really liked.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Which says a lot about where DC was like a month or two ago.
Yeah.
But all right. So moving on to a book, I didn't actually get a chance to read this next book, but I know it sounded pretty crazy from what Jared and Nick had said about it. So this is Big Lie number one by Rick Veitch, with art by Gary Erskine. I mean, Rick Veitch is great. He's written a ton of stuff. I mean, he wrote Brat Pack and
Max Immortal,
The One.
He wrote Swamp Thing after Alan Moore stopped writing it.
Yeah.
He's been around the block.
He did a Ninja Turtles storyline that was pretty good.
He did. He did Dream Comics of his own for like 50 issues or something.
Oh, yeah. He did like a Rare Bit Fiends, based on the Winsor McKay stuff, which was pretty interesting. But, I mean, one thing Rick Veitch is probably known for is writing Super Bananas, Bat Poop Crazy Comics.
Yep.
And this sounds like more of the same. Nick, the way you were describing it was that it was... kind of like a world where every conspiracy is real.
No, well,
just some important ones.
So
first of all, this is called The Big Lie, but it's just a one shot. It's not an ongoing.
Yeah. Oh, is this not an ongoing?
No, it's one. Okay. It's a one.
They
shot.
Put a number one on the front, but it's by itself.
I mean, I like Rick Veitch, but I don't think I like this. I don't know. Right. It's like it's basically it starts with a woman traveling through time.
Yes.
To September 11th. Well, she's trying to get to like before September 11th to try to stop
her.
She's
come back from the future to try and save her husband from being killed in the attack on the Twin Towers.
Perfect timing. No, but so it's the thing that I didn't like about it is it's like she travels back in time to save her husband from 9/11. But then she just goes into the tower and starts talking to her husband and his coworkers who are all like working on movies or something. But and they think that what she's talking about is part of a stunt by Steven Spielberg. And but the thing that bothered me the most about it was that it was just like she would say like, well, the towers are going to collapse. And they'd be like, oh, well, the towers wouldn't collapse unless somebody tied C4 to the parts of the building. And she's like, well, some people think that happened. And then they're like, well, nobody would take control of a plane because, you know, people are monitoring this. And then they're like, well, you know, she's like, back then, you know, people thought that maybe they did it on purpose. And then they're like, oh, well, none of the politicians would let this happen. And she's like, well, see, the politicians.
Every crazy thing about the horrible 9/11 attacks and putting it in this realm of like, this is impossible that it could happen.
And the thing that bothered me the most is this is kind of a spoiler. So tune out for the next 10 seconds. But basically at the end, the woman's like, she's kicked out. And then her husband's like, oh, this woman's crazy. And then the plane hits and they're like, oh, that's crazy. And then they're like, the guy's like, oh, maybe we'll make it out. And he's like, no. And he looks up and there's like C4 tied to like parts of the rafters or whatever. And I was like, oh, really?
It's like, oh, wow. So this is really like, I mean,
bananas.
Look, I'm kind of an anti-government guy a little bit. I kind of listened to a lot of punk rock music too, when I was a teenager, you know. But I find that these kind of 9/11 conspiracy people are, you know, it's kind of, it pisses me off a little bit.
Yeah, like I understand it. And I understand that, who knows, maybe this stuff could have happened, but just get over it. Like, who cares? Like, there's nothing you can do about it. And it's just like, you sound like a crazy person just talking about this. Like, you're like, yeah, man, the government did this and did that, and they want 9/11 to happen. They want a new Pearl Harbor. And, like, it just sounds like crazy talk. Even if it's true, it just sounds like crazy talk.
Yeah. No, what happened is we have really terrible foreign policy.
Yeah.
And we, you know, invaded a lot of countries, and then they decided to get back at us.
That's part of it, too. They were like,
no, I think you got it backwards. Didn't we invade the country? Oh, wait, never mind.
There's another part in this, too, where, like, the guy's like, the woman's like, oh, well, after this, President Bush used it to invade a country that we didn't need to invade, which is true. But, like, it's just like, just stop telling me all the things you hate. And, like, it's just like, it's basically just Rick Veitch being like, this is stuff I believe in and stuff that I hated about 9/11 and Iraq.
It's a crazy comic. If you're interested at all in that stuff, you should check it out. Otherwise,
I should also mention that it's bookended by Uncle Sam. And at the end, he's like, you should believe in the truth.
Well, also, I mean, it seems like a little bit of a cash-in to put a burning Twin Towers with a giant Uncle Sam out like a week before the 10th anniversary of
coincidence.
But anyway, okay, so that's the big lie. Yeah.
Here's something good that I just, when you mentioned that you listen to a lot of punk music, a big part of America's is also discovering music for the first time. So there you go. Yeah. Awesome.
Read America's.
Bring it back.
Okay, so moving back into the DC books this week, because they're unavoidable. There are so many of them. But this
like
is
the plague.
This is Batman Detective Comics number one. And this is by Judd Winnick. And oh no, that's not right. This is by Tony Daniel. Yep. Tony Daniel's doing the art and writing this.
Yep.
And the art in this was great. Nick, you were saying it was probably the best Tony Daniel art you think you've seen.
Yeah, actually it is. It's great. There's incredible detail in every panel.
Very dynamic.
Yeah, it looked like he took his time with this for sure. Like
there's a very cool two-page spread of Batman right at the beginning that I thought
like
was very
leaping
well
across the rooftop. Yeah. It seemed like Jim Lee-ish almost, and it's like action poses and stuff.
A little more dynamic than Jim Lee, but yeah, it's good. It's a really good Batman story, but the one thing I didn't like about this is just like just a Batman story. It's like I wanted something a little more fresh and new. Well, this seemed like it could have taken place in the last
10 to 20 years and been like, wow, this is a great Batman story.
But that being said, it's still a really good Batman story, and it's got some cool twists and a cool villain.
And it does have Joker running around for almost the entire issue, so if you missed him.
I mean, unlike a lot of the other new 52 stuff that's coming out, this isn't a huge game changer of a thing. I mean, one thing is the Joker's kind of back to normal of being like a crazy homicidal maniac.
Very much.
They talk about how he's killed like 100 and something people over the past 12 years, which I think is pretty interesting. But I think we all kind of knew at the same time. I mean, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it, right? Like, Batman and Green Lantern were definitely the two franchises right. inside of the DC universe that they kind of said they weren't going to make a lot of changes to.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, I guess the biggest change with this is that Batman Incorporated is not really happening anymore, or maybe it is.
Well, they're not talking about it right now, but you seem
Why are you stuck on Batman Incorporated?
Well, he's got a different costume, too, like, which is weird.
This is his stealthy Gotham City costume. Yeah. Who
it's
cares?
It's a different universe. Everybody has different costumes.
I'm most curious about Nightwing. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But, I mean, but overall, I thought it was, I mean, I think it's probably... We were saying it's probably the best art that Tony Daniel's done.
Yeah,
for also, sure. It's probably also, I mean, it wasn't my favorite of these new books, but I still think it's probably the best writing that Tony Daniel's ever done either.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's a cool Batman story. Again, it's pretty straightforward, but if you're into Batman, it's definitely worth checking out. I mean, I'm going to keep reading it.
It's got one really crazy twist.
Twist at the end was good. So.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Here we go. Here we go, folks.
The next thing is Green Arrow number one.
Batter up.
This is by J.T. Kroll and Dan Jurgens. I'm going to say one thing. I'm going to say one good thing about this comic before we start. Green Arrow's got like this belt buckle and it's got like an arrow shape on it that makes a G and it looks kind of cool.
Wait, really? I totally missed that.
Yeah. So,
I want to say one good thing about this too. It's better than Rise of Arsenal.
It is better than Rise of Arsenal. Okay. So here's the deal. J.T. Kroll, he wrote Justice League Rise of Arsenal, which we've talked about a few times on here. Dead cats and all that. He was writing Green Arrow for a long time. It wasn't very good. He came on, he was writing Teen Titans for a while. It had really great art by Nicola Scott, but it wasn't very good. And now he's writing Green Arrow. And one thing I always liked about his Green Arrow comic was that Green Arrow had like a pointy goatee.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't have that anymore either.
He's like a modern day Scott Lobdell.
No, Scott Lobdell's a modern day Scott Lobdell.
Yeah, that's true.
But the goatee was very much like Errol Flynn, kind of the old styled swashbuckling look.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was.
But now Green Arrow looks like
Arsenal.
He looks like Green Arrow from Smallville.
He looks like Arsenal. Oh. Yeah, well, but basically, yeah, Green Arrow from Smallville.
I mean, do you guys have anything you really want to say about this comic?
I thought the art was not terrible.
Oh, really? I thought it was terrible.
I know you didn't like it, but I thought it was fun.
It's in Jurgens. It's very old school.
It is old school. But
it's not incredibly terrible, but it's not really good. And this was definitely the worst of the new.
For me, this was the worst of the new books. Worse even than Hawk and Dove number one by Sterling Gates and Rob Liefeld.
Is that next?
That's next.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't actually have a copy of that in there, Jared.
No, but this was... I like this a lot better than Green Arrow. Is basically just him just fighting a couple of villains and then being like, "Oh, my company makes these things." Blah, blah. But yeah. Hawk and Dove, I felt had a little more of like things to keep you interested. Like,
I don't know, man.
I mean, the art was awful. I mean, it's Rob Liefeld.
See, that might be the thing for me is like I found the art in Green Arrow more palatable. It was a mediocre comic, but it wasn't terrible.
But see,
like Hawk and Dove.
If I focus just on the writing. I feel like this was better written. And if it had a better artist, it would actually be pretty good. Because I like Sterling Gates.
Yeah, Sterling Gates is a good writer.
I mean, he wrote like Firestorm for a long time and he wrote Supergirl for a little while. But it's like Hawk and Dove. It actually really ties into Brightest Day, which is really weird because I didn't think that would actually happen. But they're like, oh, you know, Dove is dating Deadman, which was a thing from Brightest Day.
Oh, was it? I didn't get that either.
I'm like, oh, interesting.
And But there's a little cool thing. There's like a thing with like Dove where she's like, I have this terrible secret about me and like why I'm Dove or whatever and what happened to his brother and there's a little
The writing's definitely building up again like a kind of like continuity and like stories behind what you're getting in the first issue.
So. There's cool little things like happening. I mean, if the art was better, I feel like this would actually be like a really good book.
Yeah, that's the main downfall of this book, the art. I mean, one cool thing is it's in DC, which is I don't know. But the Rob Liefeld art in this is so, so bad.
Yeah, it's painful.
But there are definitely like a lot of these DC books. There's a kind of a thing that happens at the end that is interesting and makes me want to read the next issue. So I'm actually going to read a second issue of a Rob Liefeld comic.
I'm not going to read it.
You're not going to read it?
No.
Oh, so you didn't like it that much.
I liked it enough, but like not enough to actually read
it. So you were just surprised that you liked it even a little tiny bit.
Yeah. I just it's better than Green Arrow, but
I
will not read it.
And Jared, you're not going to read the next
issue. That's the thing. Like, I am so much a writing person over art. Like, I will read anything with a really good story, even if the art's mediocre. And the art was so bad, it was pulling me out of the story. So
it's monumentally atrocious.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm going to read the next one.
I might. I don't know.
We'll argue about
if
it.
If I feel like
next
it.
Month.
See I'm so into this new 52 thing right now. It's like, I don't know. I'm sucked in. All right, so moving on, we're going to...
Are you going to read the second issue of Green Arrow?
Hell no.
Oh, well, then you're not that into it.
He was. The first loss. Green Arrow down.
So we're going to move out of the DC New 52 for a second here and talk about a cool kids book that came out this week called Intrepid Scapegoat, Curse of the Buddha's Tooth.
Part one.
This is part one of three. This is by Brian Smith. Intrepid Scapegoat was one of the Free Comic Book Day comics that came out. It was a very cool kind of Indiana Jones-ish story, I thought.
Yeah. With an anthropomorphic goat.
Yeah, with an anthropomorphic goat. Yeah,
very, very 1930s kind of pulp thriller action thing, but with magic and like humanoid animals. And
yeah, he's, of course, the escape goat thing is a little play on words. And then there was somebody was like, oh, the escape goat, that's funny. Let's make a comic about a goat that escaped like Harry Houdini. But actually it works.
Yep,
so,
good. Yeah.
A scapegoat's an escape artist, and it seems like he deals with supernatural crime a la sort of like Hellboy.
Or Harry Houdini.
Or what?
Yeah, well, no, yeah, because like Harry Houdini, he tries to basically goes around and tries to debunk.
Yeah,
like,
Houdini did it for
like,
real.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, Houdini did this.
Fascinating.
You
know,
Houdini went around and tried to debunk like people where they were like, I am psychic, or like, I can do this magic, and he that's what he does. He goes around and debunks his stuff. And in this story, he goes to debunk this psychic and he gets wrapped up in like real magic stuff. He knows that real magic exists, actually.
Because his sidekick is a, you know, 2,000-3,000-year-old Egyptian mummy princess girl.
Yeah, and she's great, Isis. She's very, very fun. She's very funny.
Or
and,
goddess, or whatever she is.
And Fleet, the main character, who is the scapegoat, he's very like brash and very sort of... you know, he doesn't believe in magic, even though he knows magic exists.
Sure.
He's very skeptical. But yeah, that seems to always sort of foil him a little bit.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters in this is there's like a little guy that shows up, and he was in the other one too. It's like the guy that actually makes the traps that he escapes from.
Oh, right.
And he's always like furious because a scapegoat just escapes from everything.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, this is a kids comic, right?
I'd say so. Yeah.
It's an all ages,
because it was fun.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, if you've got kids that are fans of like those Indiana Jones Adventures comics that have been coming out, or
just kids in general,
especially around the sort of 7 to 10 age.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely check this book out. It's got a very cartoony style. The art's a lot like Jay Bone.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's very like kind of old school like sensibilities. I don't know. It's awesome. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. So that's Intrepid Scapegoat, Curse of the Buddha's Tooth by Brian Smith. Yeah, it's a cool. All right. Up next, we're going to be going back into the Justice League books again. We've got...
Finally.
We're going back into the new DC 52 books, I should say, with Justice League International number 1. This is by Dan Jurgens and Aaron Lopresti. And I don't know. This wasn't one of my favorite of these new books.
Yeah, I felt this one was okay, but not astounding or terrible. So
I kind of really wish that Judd Winnick was still writing it, because he was writing Justice League Generation Lost, which had all these characters, and I feel like he got a really good feel for all of them. And
yeah,
but I mean, this wasn't really bad. It was a good introduction, and they had the kind of the team building thing, and then they actually went on it. Hold on. Let me clear my head. The opposite of Justice League, where like you only got two of the characters, and then Superman shows up at the end. And but in this one, they all meet up and they start fighting a thing at the end, and it's kind of a solid, you know, getting together the team. The thing I like the most about this is that it's like they want to the UN wants to build an international team of superheroes, so they're like look around the globe and they're like let's get person from China, we got a person from Brazil, we got, you know, this and that, and then we got an African superhero. And it's cool. The main thing that made it cool is that Batman, they were like, oh, we don't want Batman on this team. But he's kind of like made his way into the team.
Didn't want Batman because he was uncontrollable. This is supposed to be like a sponsored kind of international team that does what people expect.
And I definitely like that they started to set up already, like there's a conflict between the Green Lantern guy, Gardner, and Booster Gold in this, and then Batman kind of comes in and you know, he's like, you know, he doesn't exactly trust what's going on, but he's like, give it a chance. And he kind of is there almost as a liaison from the regular Justice League team,
right,
to keep an eye on what's going on. And no, I mean, it's certainly not bad. I think the biggest problem with this was that the main story was very much just like, there's a problem and we're going to go fix it.
Right.
But that was just the framework to kind of set up the character stuff that's going on. And there was some funny stuff in there. There's like the Russian guy, like he likes all the Russian stuff.
Red Rocket.
He's awesome. Yeah. And,
he immediately has a conflict with the Chinese.
Yeah. Right. Right. Like, But Booster Gold is like, I'm from the future. Russia and China are going to be great allies and stuff.
Yeah,
and he's like, what are you talking about? But overall, it definitely wasn't one of the best. I will say the art by Aaron Lopresti, who's done a lot of really good stuff, was really well done.
Yeah.
It's all the page layouts are really cool.
Yeah. Like the banter and like the characterization, like you said, were the strong parts, not like the plot.
But this is also the first DC book that has, a new hero, Godiva.
Oh yeah, it's Godiva new.
She's British. She's like a British superhero who hasn't really been in anything before this.
Oh, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So that was Justice League International. It was okay. It was, you know,
it's good.
If you're into all the DC stuff that's coming out right now, it's definitely worth checking out. But
yeah, I feel like it will get really good as it goes
along. But if you're just gonna pick up a few books, I would say this isn't the one to grab.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to another book in the new 52. This is Men of War number 1 by Ivan Brandon and Tom Derenick. This was really interesting because, and part of it was also by Jonathan Vankin and Phil Winslet. There are two different stories in this.
Yeah, this is one of their oversized page count books where they've got a main story and then a shorter backup story.
Yeah, and what was really interesting about this book is it's in a lot of ways, it's kind of a straight up war comic.
Yep.
But it's in the DC universe. So there's, as they're sort of on this mission, these characters, and I would say the main character is, I guess, Sergeant Rock's grandson, which is pretty interesting. And he's got a really interesting attitude and is a really well-developed character already in this first issue, I feel like. But as they're sort of on this mission, there's sort of this mysterious superhero that shows up.
Or a supervillain,
yeah,
some superpowered character,
right?
But so I thought it was kind of an interesting twist on a war comic.
I really thought it was great, yeah.
And then the backup story was more of a straight up. It was called Navy SEALs, and it was kind of more of a straight up war comic. But overall, I thought it was really cool. I thought it was well written, and it was just it was kind of a neat take on Sergeant Rock.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of neat to have like a new Sergeant Rock who's like related to the old Sergeant Rock, but it's not like. They're not bogged down by all of that Sergeant Rock stuff.
Right. And Sergeant Rock, and I like that because the original Sergeant Rock should certainly still exist as a character who fought in like World War II.
Yeah. Because that was just a war comic back when everyone did all kinds of different comics. This one is a war comic set in a superhero DC universe.
Yeah. So definitely worth checking out. I'm really curious to see who this character is. I have a theory that the character that was flying around smashing stuff up might be one of these heroes from the Kingdom that was mentioned in the Batwing comic. I don't know if it's true.
It could be Superman for all we know.
It could be Superman.
There's a lot of potential things they could do with this.
So yeah, it kind of shows that they're tying the whole universe together in a lot of ways. And of course, there's this other person that shows up that we kind of mentioned before. That's in the background of this comic as well.
This one too?
Yeah, in every comic.
I missed it. I heard this one.
We'll probably talk about it a little more at the end.
At the very end, we'll talk about this.
So that was Men of War. I'd say definitely worth checking out. All right, so moving on, we've got the New Avengers Annual. This is by Brian Bendis, of course, and art by Gabriel Delotto. And I didn't get a chance to read this, but we're going to talk about it because I know Nick was a huge fan of this book.
Yeah, this was awesome. This in regular adjectiveless Avengers, they've been building up the fact that Wonder Man, who used to be Wonder Man, he's kind of he's fed up with the Avengers. He kind of feels like the Avengers cause more problems than they actually solve.
Huh.
And he kind of wants to create a more proactive team that actually goes after threats before they attack and stuff like that. And in this issue, he's trying to stop the Avengers basically from being the Avengers. So he puts together a team of various random heroes. Like, it's weird because it's got D-Man in it, who's like one of my favorites. And it's pretty funny because... basically, this team he puts together attacks the Avengers, the new Avenger team.
You should say D-Man is a homeless person who dresses up like Daredevil.
But not in this.
Oh, okay.
And in this, he's his own character. And but it's cool because there's a funny thing where D-Man, he's like fighting all the Avengers and they're like, oh, who the hell is this guy? And they're like, he's like, I was an Avenger. He's like, don't you remember me? And then like, the one weird thing is, well, there's a couple weird things. First of all, one of the characters is Century, who is from the West Coast Avengers for a little while in Forceworks.
That is Century, not Century.
No, not Century. No, not to be confused with Century. But he was from Forceworks. He also made it into the Forceworks cartoon which is really weird. But anyway, nice. Another one of these characters that really confused me was Goliath.
The dead and no longer dead.
Who Goliath. Died in Civil War, but I'm not sure why he's in this. I don't understand how he came back or anything.
Well, didn't his nephew take over as like the new Goliath?
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's it.
Somehow. Yeah. Yeah. Or a new one.
But also, there's a really funny line in this because Atlas is also in this, who used to be in Thunderbolts. And he shows up and they're like, oh, two giant men? And they're like, there's a huge fight with all of them. And they're actually, I don't want to get, should I get into spoilers?
No.
No, probably not too much. I mean.
But anyway, something crazy happens. And at the end, oh, also there's some Squirrel Girl in this. But then the best thing is that at the end, it's like to be continued in Avengers Annual. So it seems like this will go through all the various Avengers books and kind of be a bigger story that wraps through all of the titles.
And it's got very cool art, like kind of painted art by Gabriel Del Odo, and a lot of cool like two-page spreads where it seems like Wonder Man is talking about all the different aspects of the Avengers that he hates.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, this is what you did wrong. This is what you did wrong. Yeah. This is also what you did wrong. But it's cool because, I mean, yeah, it's a cool like big fight between the Avengers and the what I think is being called the Revengers.
Oh, nice.
Which, well, anyway, it's awesome. It's
cool. So that was New Avengers Annual number one. We're going to move on to another New 52 book because there are so many of them this week. And this is OMAC number one by Dan Didio and Keith Giffen. I will say right off the bat that the art in this book is very cool. It's like Keith Giffen doing Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
And he's good at it.
Yep.
OMAC.
But the storyline in this, I mean, Nick, why don't you tell people kind of what this OMAC comic was about?
First of all, this feels like the most old school kind of comic of all of these. It feels the most like it feels like it's a comic that was written in the 70s or something. But because everybody like when they talk, it doesn't seem it's the dialogue's not natural at all.
It's very Kirby-esque.
But I expected this to be a lot worse than it was. Well, this is definitely the best comic that Dan Didio has written.
Yeah, well, and I mean, part of the reason it feels so old-timey, Dan Didio is not really a writer. I mean, he's an editor.
Yeah.
And his work on Outsiders was, I thought, abysmal.
Yes.
and the art in this, I mean, as much as I like it, is very, it's very akin to Giffen's work that he did, like, on the old Legion stuff.
Yeah.
Which was also very kind of Kirby-ish and cosmic. And, but overall, I mean, it's definitely a lot better than you would think any Dan Didio comic would be.
Sure. Yeah. My problem with it was having read the original OMAC that Kirby did, it feels like this is a pale imitation of it where they're trying to match Kirby, which when anyone tries to do it, they just no one can live up to Kirby. You can be inspired by him and do something. And this feels like they took a lot of the real ideas but didn't make it crazier or, yeah, you know.
It feels like they wanted to have the weird Kirby ideas. Like, and then, I mean, it gets really weird, but then at the end they're like, things get weirder. I'm like, oh, really?
Yep.
But yeah, so I mean, again, not. I mean, there weren't so many good DC 52 books this week. If you're gonna pick up just a few of them, don't grab this. But if you're into the whole thing, I mean, it's worth checking out.
Yeah,
yeah, it's neat. Not enough. Bad. The art is good.
Yeah, the art is very good.
It's fun.
I'm a big fan of the art. Yeah. Okay, so moving on to a very weird thing that came out this week. Kind of this is called PS Magazine. It's the best of Preventative Maintenance Monthly. This is all by Will Eisner. Basically,
never heard of him.
PS Magazine was designed as a postscript to instructional booklets that would come out for the U.S. Army. And Will Eisner would illustrate these comics that taught people how to do various things like how to properly load a truck, how to start your truck if it breaks down. How to not hoard parts so that other people can have their parts to fix their trucks, and how to like clean your weapons, and how to organize your storeroom. It's very, very, it's a very, very strange book.
Yeah.
But as I was reading it, I was like enraptured.
It's so compelling and fascinating because he builds up a cast of like goofy characters. It's basically like if he had to make a comic strip for the army about teaching them all these things. So he's got like the beautiful woman who joins the army and like the goofy, you know, mechanic who can't do anything right, and the tough sergeant, all these people who are the ones who are telling all these stories. So he's telling a story with these very, very instructional manuals.
Yeah. And like, I mean, one thing I'll say, it's, you know, it's not going to appeal to everybody, of course.
True.
But this is such a kind of cool piece of comics history.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what I was going to say too.
I've always known that Eisner did these comics, and that's kind of... it was kind of in between. I think the most interesting thing about this is what he worked on in between The Spirit
Contract from God.
And Contract from God. So like he did art for PS Magazine for 20 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's he's Will Eisner.
Yeah.
He's so good at what he does. And he's so good at it that he can make this stuff interesting.
Yeah.
The main character in this is so funny. And he would be, I think his name's Joe Dope.
Yep.
And he would be, you know, he would fit right in a spirit comic, but he would also fit right in Contract with God. So it's interesting if you're interested in Will Eisner and you want to see his sort of evolution as a cartoonist and just as like a piece of comics history.
It's fascinating.
And it's a beautiful little book. I mean, it's great looking and kudos to Abrams Comic Art. They always put out really, really nice looking stuff, and this is definitely one to add to any collection of somebody who's like a comics historian kind of.
Right. And this is like the best of it. It's been curated by Eddie Campbell, who's like a huge comic historian himself. So we went through and definitely, you know, he has a nice little introduction saying like these are the ones Eisner did, these are the ones from his studio. But he's also like, these are the best. I didn't put in the really boring ones or the ones where like they were super edited by, you know, the brass who didn't like these really, you know, sexy girls teaching people how to drill mechanics or these, you know, goofy mechanics who made the army look bad, even though that's the most funny part about the whole thing. So,
yeah, no, it's a very cool book. I mean, yeah, I would recommend it to, of course, if you're a fan of the spirit or you like Eisner's graphic novels.
Yeah,
this is definitely kind of the missing link between those. And it's very cool stuff. And there's a lot of writing in it, too. That's really interesting. Sort of the history of him working on it and the stuff that Jared was talking about like how, you know, some of the higher ups weren't really happy with some of the stuff that he did. It's very cool stuff. All right, so moving on to a couple of Spider Island books. There were two one-shots this week that came out in the Spider Island storyline. We've talked about it a few times, but Spider Island is basically everybody in New York is getting spider powers. It's as simple as that. So there was one called Spider Island Avengers number 1 by Chris Yost and Mike McCone.
Which was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So, Nick, why don't you tell people about that?
Basically, it's a comic. It focuses mainly on Hawkeye, Jessica Jones, Miss Marvel
and
Frogman.
Oh yeah,
gotta love Frogman.
Also with a dash of Squirrel Girl thrown in,
for who good I measure. Always love.
And I feel like this was the funniest thing I read this week. It was just every time Frogman said or did anything, it was incredible. And the banter between him and Miss Marvel and Hawkeye and Jessica Jones was everything they said was just so funny. This is one of the best things I read this week. It kept me laughing the whole way through.
It's very funny.
And by the end, I was like, this is awesome.
And Frogman barfs at one point.
Yes. That's an attack on a supervillain.
This was a lot of fun. I always like those sort of like Frogman and Squirrel Girl. It's really funny. These are like sort of these weird characters that nobody cared about for such a long time. But these like the newer writers love them. It was very cool. And there was another Spider Island book that came out this week too called Spider Island I Love New York City. This has a lot of different people in it, but the ones really worth mentioning are Chuck Beebe worked on it, Greg Rucka worked on it, Max Fiamara, Scott Young, and Kelly Sue DeConnick was the last one, so I guess I'll just mention everybody. But Chuck Beebe,
I mean, yeah.
That's the one that's Kelly Sue DeConnick and Chuck Beebe. And it's about a regular woman that gets spider powers.
Well, Chuck Beebe, you should say, is the person that drew Black Metal, which is one of the funniest, greatest, sort of quirky little graphic novels from the last few years.
We'll be talking about number 2 in
Volume
2 is
coming out soon.
Yeah, pretty soon. So these stories were actually all available online through the Comixology app, I think, for free at one point. But you guys don't like digital comics. Those things are too old-timey. Yeah, the wave of the past. So so this collects all those. And like a lot of these Marvel anthologies, it's really varied and it's got a good sense of humor.
But this one isn't like a mixed bag. All of them are good.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, so
like, the Fiona Morris art is also astounding. Like, just so good.
Yeah, I've been surprised by most of these Spider Island tie-ins. I mean, the Spider-Girl was really solid. The Cloak and Dagger one was fantastic. Nick Spencer and Emma Rios. Amazing. You know what I'm saying? But this is definitely worth checking out. I mean, of course, if you've read these online, there's not really much extra in here. But
if you haven't, you should buy this.
But if you haven't, you should definitely check this out. All right. So diving back into the DC New 52 again. There's so many books this week. This is Static Shock number one. This is co-written by Scott McDaniel and John Rosum, and with art by Scott McDaniel. I think it's interesting that John Rosum was one of the original Milestone writers.
Yeah.
And just did the zombie six-issue miniseries.
And he just did the fantastic zombie six-issue miniseries. So going into Static Shock, I thought it was going to have that kind of weird flavor to it. But I didn't really get much of that from it.
No, it's got a little bit of it, but mostly it's pretty straightforward. It's like, hey, I'm Static Shock. I have this power to control electricity, and here's things I can do with it. And he fights some guys.
I think there's more to it than that, but yeah, it's a definitely bit. It's a very standard superheroes type comic. It wasn't super weird. Yeah. It wasn't super bad. It was,
but it's got a little cool like family dynamic thing where he's like, it's like the, you know, young teenager trying to be a superhero kind of thing. And there's a cool thing in here where his mom's like, oh, you should cut your hair. And he's like, no, I like it this way. It makes me look hip.
And I will say, I didn't actually know until I looked at the cover of this that it was Scott McDaniel on art, because this art is so like, it's for him, who I know from sort of doing more cartoony stuff. It's like really, really well rendered and well done. A lot of really cool page layouts and stuff.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun. But yeah, it was very much like very basic. Like, I didn't feel like this was like, I would have liked to see some more elements of the DC universe in this Static Shock and him sort of worked into the DC universe a little bit more.
Yeah, that's true.
But overall, I thought it was a fun book. I mean, it's, you know, it's, there wasn't a lot more to it than that, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think worth checking out. So moving on to Stormwatch number one. This is by Paul Cornell and Miguel Sepulveda.
I love Paul Cornell.
Yeah. Paul Cornell is going to be writing the Demon Knights book that comes out next week.
Nice.
Which is going to be awesome, and everybody's going to hate it, but we're going to love it. And Stormwatch was interesting. Jared, why don't you tell people what Stormwatch was about? It was a pretty nutty story.
Really weird. So you basically, for people who've read a lot of old DC Wildstorm stuff, you take a lot of the characters from the Authority, including,
Apollo, the Midnighter. It was Jenny Sparks in this.
Hawksmoor,
but not just
Jenny Quantum.
Jenny Quantum, or the young kid, yeah. And throw them all together, like basically trying to form a new team, but instead of the Authority, it's going to be Stormwatch this time, with the sidekick or the new leader of Martian Manhunter to tie it all together to the DC universe. And it was strange seeing them together because they were pretty similar to how they used to be, but slightly different and updated. And yeah.
Yeah, and this Apollo's kind of this unknown superhero, and Stormwatch is kind of investigating him. And
trying to recruit him. So basically, he's the new figure they're trying to pick up.
And it was interesting. I mean, Midnighter kind of shows up at the end, and he's got some interesting ideas that I don't really want to talk about because that's kind of a big spoiler.
Yeah.
But the stuff the Midnighter says at the end definitely makes me want to read the next issue of this.
Yes.
And one thing I'm really curious about, of course, one of the big sort of things about the Authority and these characters of Apollo Midnighter is that they've had a homosexual relationship for years in the comics.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they'll get back to that in this in the long run, because I think that having a gay Batman and Superman who are in love with each other it makes for a really cool dynamic.
Especially in the actual DC universe.
Yeah, in the actual DC universe. So I'm hoping DC will make that leap, because, you know, it's, you know, I don't want to say it's important, but it's, you know,
it is
you know, there are gay people and there's no reason they shouldn't be in comics.
I would definitely feel slightly offended if they like cut
that
out.
I would too. But
I'll feel condescended too.
Yeah. So, but I think this Stormwatch issue was a pretty good setup for what is going to be good stories down the line.
Sufficiently weird and epic at the same
time.
It's
very weird. Well, anything with Hawksmoor is weird. You know, he's got his big feet and he talks to the city with them. And
well, they're also throwing some weird background stuff in there that was new. So
background stuff. Well, there was a character in the background of this issue.
Should we talk about that?
We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Oh, yeah. What a tease.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about it next because we'll talk about it at the very end. But this, we're going to talk about this next book. This is Swamp Thing number one.
Okay.
Swamp Thing. You are amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. That was actually the Swamp Thing's theme song from the cartoon.
Yep. Not to be confused with Wild Thing.
Not to be, because it's not the same at all. It's so totally different. So this is by Scott Snyder, who is amazing. Scott Snyder's been writing Detective Comics, American Vampire. He wrote Iron Man Noir. He's good.
He rocks it.
Like, and he's going to be writing the new Batman series that starts up either next week or the week after. And art by Yannick Paquette, who is also incredible.
This was, I feel like this was the best drawn of the new books so far.
Yeah, this was probably my favorite art. I really like the Animal Man art as well.
But, yeah, that was really cool. But, this is the more like solid, like really good art.
Yeah, so I thought this issue was really good, though. I mean, this might have been the best of the new issues that came out this week. It's I'm definitely back and forth between this and Swamp Thing, but
or this and Animal Man.
Oh, sorry, this and Animal Man. Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like you like Swamp Thing.
Yeah, sounds
Thing
like
more.
I really like Swamp
this,
Thing.
This and the other Swamp Thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. So, so who wants to tell people what Swamp Thing was about?
Go ahead, Jared.
Jared.
Oh man, I don't remember.
I know, it's pretty nutty.
Well, it's about Alec Holland.
Yeah, it's drawing on a lot of the like old Swamp Thing ideas that, you know, it's still Alec Holland. But I feel like I've missed some Swamp Thing stuff because they're saying that that Alec Holland, the human, is not Swamp Thing anymore.
The thing is,
that's from...
It kind of ties to the Brightest Day Aftermath stuff. Okay. But just going into this, it's fine to figure it out. Like it's just like Alec Holland is like, I died. I was creating this plant, this crazy plant formula to make plants grow in arid climates and stuff like that. And I died. And he's like, recently I just suddenly found myself alive again. And he's like, and I have these memories of being Swamp Thing. And he's like, I don't know how or why, but I have these memories. And it's about him. There's a lot of talk about botany and plant life and stuff, but it's all very captivating. And
I mean, I think one of the biggest things that's going on in this book is that there's sort of all these crazy anomalous things happening all over the world. Like animals dying, plants dying,
yeah.
and Superman is kind of, you know, or Clark Kent even a little bit more, is investigating what's going on, and he comes to Alec Holland because he knows he's kind of an expert on these kind of things.
Well, the thing is that it's not just Superman, it's that all these other superheroes are noticing it, and Superman's the one who goes after this. So you got Batman and Wonder Woman tied in too.
Yeah, so he goes and he talks to Alec Holland, and he's like, hey, why are you just, you know, like a construction worker.
Yeah, he's like, hey, Swamp Thing.
And it's really interesting because Alec Holland is like, well, I came back and I have these memories of being Swamp Thing, but I don't feel like I have any sort of purpose anymore. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting. It gets a lot into Alec Holland's character and how this has kind of influenced him. He's like, I'm in love with this woman. I don't even know who she is.
Yeah.
And then at the end, there's like a very big thing that happens.
Yeah.
Which I don't want to give away. But yeah, but I thought that the art was great in it.
Really good.
And it's such an intriguing story already.
Yeah.
That I think this and Animal Man are definitely the two must buy books this week.
It also kind of ties into Animal Man because in this, Alec Holland and Swamp Thing are kind of the protectors of the green. And in Animal Man is the protector of the red.
Right, which sort of comes out of Brightest Day in a little bit of a way too. Yeah. But it was really interesting. Definitely worth checking out for sure. I mean, I think a lot of people are a little reticent to check out Swamp Thing just because
it's Swamp Thing.
Yeah, it's Swamp Thing. I mean, it used to be great when Alan Moore wrote it, but then it's gone through various phases where like Josh Dysart wrote it for a really long time. Yeah, and like some of that stuff was really good, but it was like, you know, it's been all over the place, so people don't know what to expect from it. Well, I'm telling you, expect it to be awesome because it's really, really good.
Yes.
That's the last. We're going to talk about a couple other books, but that was the last DC book this week. Yes. So I think this is a good time to talk about this character that's shown up in all of these books.
Yes.
All of them?
This is a mystery every single book. we discovered while reading these.
Yeah, we went through all of these today. Basically, in the background of every single issue, there's a mysterious...
All of them.
Yep. There's a mysterious woman. I think she's a woman.
Yeah, she's
a
definitely a woman.
A hooded figure who's probably a woman.
She's a hooded figure. Well, I'm pretty sure she's a woman, because basically, if you guys read Flashpoint 5, there is a woman that's describing the three timelines converging, and I'm pretty sure this is her.
Yeah, it's definitely her, and so, she's in all of these.
So she seems to be checking things out. She was even in Justice League number one when we went back and looked at that.
That's what I was wondering.
And, yeah, I noticed it because I was reading Stormwatch, and I saw like a weird glowing figure in the background. I was like, what does that have to do with anything? And I was like, I figured out. I was like, oh, it's Stormwatch. It's weird. So maybe that has something. And then I started reading Swamp Thing, and the same glowing figure appears, and I was like, wait, what? So then I went back and like looked through all of them, and you could see that this character appears in all of them. And hopefully it's not a way to tie everything back to the old universe.
Well, that's my big worry. Of course, when all this was starting and we knew that they were going to launch the new DC universe, we kind of talked about, well, how long until somebody's like, oh, I remember everything that happened. And I'm like, oh, well, if this is who I think it is, than already.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Yeah, but hopefully not. Hopefully this is. Hopefully she is not just a reset button that's hidden in the back of all these issues.
I'm pretty sure they're building to like the first DCNU crossover or whatever. You know.
Yeah. Hopefully. I hope it's not one of these things where they start to merge it with the old universe and things like that, because that could be really unfortunate. Yeah. But as of right now, just this appearance of this character has got me intrigued.
And it's cool to look through all of these titles and try to find her in the background.
Yeah, it's a fun nice little Easter egg. Yeah, it's a fun little Easter egg.
Where's Waldo?
It's like, where's Waldo?
Carmen Sandiego.
Or where's Wally if you're from places besides the United States?
Yeah.
So that was all the DC Universe books this week.
We made it.
Yeah, definitely. So I just wanted to talk about one more thing that came out this week that is very weird.
Yes,
but amazingly so.
Yeah, this is Velveteen and Mandala by Jiro Matsumoto. This is a vertical book that came out.
It definitely stands vertically.
It definitely does. It's very strange. Jared, could you even begin to sort of describe the plot of this to somebody?
Partially.
Jared's reading the back of the book.
No, I read the back of the book after I finished it, and it did not help. Basically, there's the two girls of the title Velveteen and Mandala who are like young high school girls, and there seems to be some sort of war going on, and maybe a genetic apocalypse, and maybe zombies coming back from the dead, and maybe it's all in their heads, and maybe they don't exist.
And maybe these spirits that inhabit this river that's close to where they live that
which
are causing...
might be causing the zombies from the war, or it might be a biological plague that started, or it's all being made up, and they're crazy.
Basically, 40, 50 pages into this, I felt like I was going insane.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very interesting book. Yeah, and like Jared said, it's like you get a certain sense that maybe these girls are a little bit nuts, or maybe just the person...
No, they're definitely nuts.
But maybe just... Well, they're definitely nuts, yeah. Or maybe just the person that wrote it is nuts.
Well, no, that's the other interesting thing, because Jiro Matsumoto is referenced several times in a meta commentary sense, where either like just the dialogue suddenly begins talking to him, or will say, geez, Jiro, are you really getting paid to draw this page? Or like, why are you drawing this kind of storytelling right here? So
yeah, I will say as just a little disclaimer that this is a very adult book, especially in the second half of things.
Yes, for sure.
So if you're squeamish or you're buying this for your kid that loves Naruto, do not.
It's shrink wrap for a reason.
Yeah, it's definitely shrink wrap for a reason. But I love the art in this. It's very great. It's very sketchy. It reminds me a lot of Taiyo Matsumoto. And
who's the guy who did Blank or whatever? Not that.
Blame?
Yeah, Blame. He did that Wolverine Schnick thing too.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can't remember his name. I know what you're talking about, but yeah, I think that's fair too. And one thing that goes through this, there are a lot of references to other manga and anime sort of things.
Yep.
But not like crappy things like Fruits Basket and Full Metal Alchemist. No offense. But but there are a lot of Hayao Miyazaki references in this, a lot, and there are a few Neon Genesis Evangelion references,
a lot of those too.
And if you're a fan of like the sort of the weirder side of manga, which I definitely am, like things like Peepo Chew or 1 Billion Needles or any of the Taiyo Matsumoto, like Tekken Concrete or Blue Spring, or especially Go-Go Monster,
It's weird to the max.
It's weird to the max.
Yeah. It does maybe tie it all together at the end, but it also just reads like a experiment of a guy just having the time of his life doing crazy cool stories.
Yeah, in a way, and this is kind of would be off-putting, but it reminded me of Sucker Punch a little bit. But
yeah,
like,
if Sucker Punch was as awesome as you thought it would.
Yeah. If Sucker Punch was not like the terrible mess that it is. But that's Velveteen and Mandala. It's a very interesting book.
Yeah,
it's something.
I don't actually buy a lot of comics because I read everything every week, but I think I'm definitely gonna buy this.
Yeah, and if you want something different, like if you want to see what comics can do and you don't just want something different or regular, get
this. If you feel like you aren't insane and you want to go insane, read this.
Or if you really want to go insane, you can listen to the Big Planet Comics podcast every week.
Go bonkers.
Yeah, you'll go crazy. Yeah, so we'll be back next week with some more of these DC 52 books. I think there will be 13 more next week.
Oh God.
We're going to be pretty review heavy for the whole month. But no, I had fun talking about all these books.
Yeah,
no,
they're good.
There's definitely a lot of stuff going on.
There's an air of excitement.
There is definitely an air of excitement. I like how they're tying everything together. And yeah, it should be cool. I guess we'll find out next week.
Yep.
See you guys later.
Have a good one.